can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down.
Welcome back to another edition of Black Shoe Diaries podcast. If you were with us last week, Adam and I discussed some lighter fare when we had former player Graham Zug on the show. We discussed many different things, but one of the things we did not touch upon purposefully was the free report and everything that circled around that. The past 3 days have been quite tense, so to kind of address the elephant in the room, we've got a special guest that we'll bring on in a minute. But Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How you doing, Jeff?
Very well. You want to bring on our special guest?
Yeah, let's bring in our special guest. So the guest we have on today is another favorite of all Black Shoe Diaries readers, I'm sure. More lawyers. Michael L. Buckner from the Buckner Law Firm is here. The Michael L. Buckner Law Firm is based out of Florida, and they assist clients with internal investigations, ethics inquiries, and all sorts of compliance issues involving NCAA guidelines and enforcement. He's an expert in the field. He's been on ESPN. He's talked to ESPN reporters. He's was quoted in the Center Daily Times, if I remember correctly, last week, and we're pleased to have him. So how you doing, Mike?
I'm fine. How are you guys doing today?
Excellent. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your practice and things like that?
Sure. We're one of the few firms in the country that all we do is NCAA compliance and enforcement work. We do a little high school work, but mainly all of our clients are colleges and universities that are members of the NCAA. And if a school has an issue, whether it be from NCAA rules violations to misconduct to operational issues, anything involving intercollegiate athletics, our clients call us to help them out.
All right. So the way most colleges work, at least that most athletic departments work, is that they have a special section dedicated to compliance people, right? And so
Correct,
how does it get from those compliance people into your hands?
Generally speaking, you're right. There are a certain area of the athletics department, and some universities are now taking that athletic compliance function into a larger campus compliance realm. But generally speaking, the compliance departments and those officers in those departments are in charge of ensuring NCAA compliance as well as any other compliance issues that are assigned to it by the campus administration.
Excellent. I imagine that you've read the report on the internal investigation done by former FBI Director and Judge Free and his group. Give me some general thoughts on the methodology that the report dealt with, how they came to their conclusions, and what you thought of the report in general.
Well, I thought, you know, we always look at any law firm that does a major investigation, and if it's available publicly, we will look at the report to see where or not to look at the findings, to see the methodology, see whether there are any new techniques that they're using that we could adopt in our practice. And in our review of the free report, we were impressed by the thoroughness of the investigative activities, the number of documents in the millions that they reviewed, the number of people that they interviewed, over 400, and just the overall comprehensive nature of their investigation. The report size, about 267 pages. You know, that's the typical length for an investigation of this size. So that didn't surprise us. The actual content of the report, we really were impressed by it because of the flow. It really told the story. It didn't get hung up a lot of legal jargon. It was really easy for, I think, the average person to read, which is very, very important in a public nature, this type of case, because of the public nature of this type of case. The only thing that we, I think, again, we're going to vet the report a little bit more, but the only thing I was a little surprised about is there were a few times that I think that they didn't have any evidence to directly leak every single thing, so they took some type of inferences. And I don't recall specifically all the ones that I read, but that just struck me that in our practice, we would normally, every single line, every single sentence in one of our reports is backed up by something, by some type of evidence, whether it be a document, an interview, an expert opinion, some type of study or analysis, something so that we can link every single sentence to our ultimate finding.
Do you usually attach the documentation that you have as exhibits to the report? Because I think one of the things that was most important for me and one of the things that I was really pleased with was the fact that the report had attached documentation, emails, notes, what have you, that was very easy to say, okay, well, this is where we got this information from. And it really made it, it gave it a level of credibility that I think people were concerned that it wouldn't have.
Yes, we do. We will attach to our report every single document that is referenced in the text of the report, as well as additional documentation that may not be referenced, but was relevant to the overall case. And oftentimes our reports are going to the NCAA, so you want to make sure that you populate the record of the case with as much relevant information as possible. Institutions that are members of the NCAA are obligated to provide full and complete information to the NCAA. So I think Judge Freeze's firm, took the same approach in terms of attaching the relevant pieces from their investigative activities.
One of the primary concerns, I think, for people, even before the report was released, was the fact that the Board of Trustees, which hasn't had the most wonderful track record recently, they were the ones that were paying for the report, and there was a concern that they would actually see the report before it was coming out. And there was a real concern that there was going to be some bias, since, you know, in your line of work, you do a lot of these things. Obviously, the report has to be paid for somebody. What do you say to people that would be critical of that to sort of ease their mind about the neutral nature of the investigation?
Well, you know, if a university is going to do a good job in terms of finding out what goes on, they have to commission somebody. And it's normally going to be the board of trustees or the president, the general counsel, the athletic director, someone in authority at a school. And that's what goes on every single day in our business. Schools hire me in my firm to conduct internal investigations on their behalf. And as an attorney, I have an obligation, an ethical obligation as an attorney and as representing a university or college to be ethical and honest and conduct a thorough investigation. And that means to uncover facts that may be detrimental to the interests of my client. So Judge Freeze, of course, an attorney. He has a law firm, and he's under the same obligation. And I think Judge Freeze understood that concern or issue that some people may have concerning his independence. If you notice in his body of the report, he has a very detailed section which describes the independent nature of his firm's investigation. And documents the methodology that his firm took, not only to conduct the investigation, but how the university cooperated and did not interfere or adversely impact his team's ability to collect information.
Makes sense to me. Why don't we turn a little bit to the NCAA and the prospect of some sort of NCAA sanction? You know, you've been reading a lot lately from people concerning the idea that, you know, Penn State needs to be punished by the NCAA, that there needs to be some kind of investigation or something to deal with these issues from that governing body. I guess, you know, is that in line with the mission of the NCAA and anything else like that?
It is in line of the mission of the NCAA if that's what the member institutions deem it to be. What the public needs to understand, and your listeners need to understand, every single rule that the NCAA has is not prepared and passed by the staff in Indianapolis. It's proposed and passed and made a rule or a bylaw by the members themselves. And the NCAA has a very comprehensive rulemaking process where they go through committees and cabinets and ultimately the board of directors, which is composed of representatives, presidents from various schools that are members of the NCAA. And so the NCAA at this time has not made the activities that are described in a free report to be NCAA rules violations. No matter, and we can all agree, of course, that the behavior of Sandusky is horrendous, and the cover-up by those campus officials is equally horrendous as well. But that does not make it an NCAA rules violation because it's not currently in the manual to cover the behavior and actions of those officials. Now the NCAA, with that being said, the NCAA could take one of several steps. Because it's not a NCAA rules violation, as the manual and the bylaws are currently applied and interpreted, the NCAA could say, you know what, we don't have jurisdiction, the behavior doesn't implicate an NCAA rules violation, so we're not going to do anything in Penn State. They could take a second alternative, which is, yes, we acknowledge that the behavior doesn't implicate a NCAA rules violation, but we're going to take some of our bylaws, like the honesty provisions, the ethical conduct provisions, and we're going to create a new interpretation for those existing bylaws and apply it to the behavior of the Penn State case. And through that, we're going to now punish Penn State. Or three, they could say, look, the behavior doesn't implicate an NCAA rules violation, but we're going to use these findings to open up our own investigation to determine whether or not there are some NCAA rules violations at Penn State. If you read the report, there is some indication, some inference that there may have been preferential treatment provided to student athletes. And so that would be an NCAA rules violation, but that needs to be further explored and clarified by the NCAA. Another area that a lot of people aren't focusing in on, if the NCAA doesn't have jurisdiction or NCAA rules do not apply, do Big Ten rules apply? Could the Big Ten step in and punish Penn State? Because the NCAA only regulates athletics, the Big Ten Conference also not only regulates athletics, but also has jurisdiction over other aspects of the universities that are members of that conference.
Interesting. That I actually hadn't thought of the Big Ten model, but that makes a lot. That actually makes far more sense to me than the NCAA stepping in. Andy Peoples last week wrote something about how the same reason why the NCAA shouldn't deal with this incident at Penn State is the same reason why the IRS doesn't punish murderers, because it just doesn't make very much sense in within the scope of their responsibilities. I'm curious. We've heard a lot of discussion about the concept of lack of institutional control. And that has a very specific meaning in an athletics compliance context versus what many people would think of in layman's terms it would mean. Particularly that, oddly enough, in this case, it doesn't seem to be like there's been a lack of institutional control. It's almost that the institution has had far too much control over these situations. But what are your thoughts on that? The use of that that piece of the NCAA regulation in relation to this issue?
Well, let me just touch upon what you said before you asked the question about the IRS example, and then I'll talk about the lack of institutional control issue. I agree with you that there are certain things that the IRS has jurisdiction over. Congress passed rules, the IRS passed regulations to implement those statutes, so it has a narrow focus on what it goes after. So it doesn't go after murders, it goes after anything related to taxes. A similar case dealing with the NCAA happened with Baylor back several, not the most recent Baylor case, but the Baylor case several numerous years ago, in which you had a murder and various criminal activities, and that then the then head coach tried to cover up some of those things. Now, the NCAA, no matter how horrendous those criminal actions were, and they were, a murder is, of course, one of the most ultimate criminal acts that you can do. The NCAA did not punish Baylor for the murder or those other related criminal violations. They punished Baylor for the NCAA rules violations that occurred in the program. So if the NCAA wants to keep its precedent, in terms of not interfering in purely criminal violations. They will not do anything to Penn State for the pure criminal violations involved in this case. Now, in terms of lack of institutional control, the Free Report does describe, if you want to talk about from a general organizational standpoint, or a philosophical standpoint on how do you want to run an organization. It does describe lack of organizational control, okay? The fact that you have individuals of high decision-making positions that did not report allegations or violations to the appropriate officials. That is, and disregarding the organization's internal rules,
right.
That is one of the elements of lack of organizational or institutional control. What the Free Report does not describe is lack of institutional control as it is defined in the NCAA manual or as it is defined by the Committee on Infractions, which is the ultimate arbiter within the NCAA to determine whether or not there are major rules violations. Another reason why it's not lack of institutional control from the NCAA's perspective is that in order to have that finding, there must be underlying NCAA rules violations in order to reach up to lack of control. And so, again, we don't have that yet. So if you don't have the underlying rules violations, then you can't then say, okay, well, there was an institution that lacked control over its athletics program.
Michael, you've talked about a lot of different possibilities of where this could go, what the NCAA could do, the Big Ten could do. And I hate to put you on the spot, but what is your inkling of what will happen? It's tough to obviously say what Indianapolis will do from the NCAA standpoint or Big Ten standpoint, but you've been through a number of these before. What do you think is not necessarily the best course of action, but what will actually take place?
Right, yeah, well, that's a good distinction. I could tell you what should happen if these things should stay out of it, and let the experts deal with this, which is the experts is the criminal justice system.
Right.
And Penn State's going to get sued, I'm sure, in the civil courts.
Yes, absolutely.
But what I think is, I'm sorry?
No, go ahead, just agreeing. They're going to get sued, they're going to see a lot of this, and they're going to be paying for some time.
Correct. And then that's not including the public perception and the damage to it. That Penn State's going to be suffering from years on end. But what I think is going to happen, President Emmert and NCAA are going to be under public pressure to do something. And I could see the NCAA, either President Emmert doing some type of proposed sanction to Penn State, negotiating with Penn State on what a sanction could be like. And realistically, Penn State could not, I think, argue against a sanction because of the public pressure. I mean, could you imagine Penn State trying to argue that the NCAA can't step in and punish the institution? That would be a public relations disaster. I could see the NCAA doing that or conducting its own investigation, saying, look, there are some indications in the report that may lead to some NCAA rules violations, so we're going to have our enforcement staff in to conduct another investigation, this time into pure NCAA rules violations. And as you may know, and I tell people when I go out and do public speaking, I can go to any college campus, and if I look hard enough and long enough, I will find a major rules violation. And so I am sure the enforcement staff could find something that could justify placing Penn State on some type of sanctions that are based upon pure NCAA rules violation.
One more question before we let you go, Michael, and we really appreciate your time again. It's been fantastic. If Penn State was your client and this had been your report that had come out, what do you think the best course of action for Penn State is to now mitigate whatever damage there is and has been to the institution from here on out?
Well, that's a good question. I think my first advice would be to be open, honest, and transparent about every single thing that you're doing. And the Free Report is the first step in that. I think I would take the Free Report and make immediate, long-lasting, and substantive changes to the structure within the athletics department. The athletics department would no longer be that semi-independent entity. It would be integrated within the overall governance structure of the university. I would review the performances, employment performances, and the actions or inactions of all the administrators at the university, from the campus and athletic administration, to make the necessary changes there. I would beef up not only the athletic compliance area, but I would also look at what am I doing compliance-wise throughout the university, because as you read your free report, there were some violations of the Clery Act, which requires a federal law, which requires education universities that are receiving federal funds to report criminal violations on an annual basis. That did not happen in state. So therefore, there may be some lapses in campus compliance, which I would need to plug. I would also, because of public pressure, I would also look at possibly, after, you know, again, reading the free report and analyzing it and looking at what we can and should do, possibly placing some self-imposed penalties on the athletics program and the football program specifically, including possibly some postseason bans or reductions or some other reductions, so that because this started within the athletics program, although it's not an athletics issue, it's a more of a university organizational issue. The public perception is focused in on athletics. So the university, I think, needs to address that and do some type of self-imposed penalties on itself. And then I would also be in negotiations, backroom negotiations with the Big Ten Conference and the NCAA, so that we can negotiate any type of penalty, so that everyone comes out a winner. If there can be a winner in this sad situation. I would also be looking at what can I do to address and be proactive in terms of stemming any potential type of lawsuits, civil lawsuits against the university, and be now very aggressive in my negotiations with the victims' families and any type of advocacy groups. I think there could be a global settlement with a lot of these victims, as well as looking at what we can do from an institutional organizational standpoint. So that's initially what I would do. It would be I could see this being another year or two of just intense, reworkings of the organization and analysis of what Penn State did not do properly and what it could do correctly in the future.
Is this the kind of thing where you would continue to work with clients after your initial recommendations? You would continue to work with clients to make sure that they hit benchmarks and check marks every couple months or so to make sure they're still in line?
Yes, and that's a very good point. In fact, normally when you're in the NCA case, you would have to report your status of your implementation of your recommendations and the penalties once a year. I would do that, but I would do it publicly, and I would do it once every 6 months. Hey, this is our biannual type of report on what we're doing and where we are in terms of implementing the recommendations from the free report. This is what we're doing in terms of our self-imposed penalties. So the public knows. Again, it's all about transparency.
Makes sense. This has been a fantastic discussion. We really appreciate it. There's always a lot of speculation, especially, our commenters are very active. And there's been a lot of speculation out there about what's going on. And it's good to have a real understanding from an expert who's been involved in these situations as to what everybody's looking at and what the potential consequences are. So, Michael, thank you. We very much appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
All right, Jeff, what do you think?
Adam.
I'm still here.
Sorry. I thought we had a little technical difficulty. Sorry, listeners. It was great to hear, obviously a trained mind who knows about these issues and has actually been through these investigations. So I think what he said was spot on about the report. It read very well. It flowed well. It was sourced, although, like he said, it wasn't as well sourced as I would have liked. I know what he was talking about. Sometimes they said it would be a reasonable assumption to think this, or this is a valid inference. But for the most part, it was a good read, and I think all of his takes on the NCAA, the Big Ten, and what Penn State should do were pretty spot on.
Yeah, I think he makes a lot of sense. I actually think, what he was saying with the inferences made by the report you know, the report isn't wrong that these are reasonable inferences to make. They're reasonable. Whether or not you can realistically judge intent by the evidence is something that I think a lot of our commenters aren't willing to make, make that leap yet, just yet. And, it's interesting to hear from a guy like Mr. Buckner, who's obviously extremely experienced and obviously an unbiased source, that that's the hole that he sees in the report. Although I gotta say, it's not a very big one. Obviously there's been a real screw up in the administration and they're going to be there. Whatever their intent was is almost irrelevant at some point because they're going to be held to account for it.
Right.
And I think that's important in order for us to move forward.
Right. And I think what he was saying about after you asked the question about Penn State, they need to come out and be proactive. They can't sit on their hands and wait for somebody to punish them and somebody to sue them. Although in the latter case, they have to because they can't just go out and accept suits. But in terms of punishment, I think they need to be proactive and say, you know, we know that we screwed up, and here's some of the things we're going to do at the beginning before we even are punished, if we ever are punished by the NCAA or Big Ten. We'll do X, Y, and Z. Maybe that includes donating money or a percentage of all 2012 and beyond revenue to charities. I'm not sure what they're thinking, but I think they need to take the first step as opposed to being reactive.
Yeah, I agree, and it's something that this board has been loath to show, as in their nature. They haven't been very proactive, although I have to say that I was very pleased with their response to the report. I was particularly pleased with Ken Frazier's leadership on the special task force. It actually honestly makes me wish that Ken Frazier was the president of the Board of Trustees because he seems to be the kind of leader that is so desperately needed there. I think it's important for that group to join with Dave Joyner and the athletics department and Rodney Erickson and come out with some kind of a series of implementation of whatever recommendations and punishments that they think are needed. I don't think we're likely to see a self-imposed bowl ban. Obviously, they're not going to cancel the football program, as some overzealous people would love to believe. I wouldn't be totally surprised to see at least a portion of the gate receipts go to a place like RAIN or Pennsylvania-based child abuse organizations. And then certainly the bowl receipts, which is what they did last year. I think you'll probably see that for a couple more years.
Right. I don't think they're going to do anything that punishes the current football team, and it's my opinion that they shouldn't. Nobody that's on that team now, save two assistant coaches who may have been tangentially related to this whole mess, was in any way involved. So to punish them individually is not going to do any good out of what happened. If you're going to affect the current football team in any way, I think it has to be, like we said, some sort of percentage of revenue going to charities, greater awareness of the issue of charities in general. I'm not sure, but punishing this team is not going to essentially do any justice for anybody.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, self-imposing probation and probation for major rules violations, I think, would be important. Bill O'Brien appears to have controlled this program. Dave Joyner has, you know, despite what everybody was concerned about, he appears to have done he appears to be doing a good job in his leadership role. These are people that we should trust to make sure, ensure compliance with NCAA standards, actual athletic standards, which this university has been doing for decades. And I think that's really where we're headed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as we make a big public showing of it, and we should because it's important, then I don't think that the NCAA will do much else other than agree to keep a careful eye over the athletics department and issue a sternly worded letter, which appears to be their MO.
Yeah, yeah. If history is any guide.
Yeah, but I think this has been a really interesting podcast. I hope people enjoy it. I know it's not, it's probably not as exciting as talking about Emma Stone and Blake Lively and Breakfast Meets, but I think it was useful, and I hope that everybody really had a good time listening to us.
Yeah, it was good to get a different take on the events from someone that's been through these things before, so it was good. So we once again want to thank everybody for listening, and hopefully we'll go back to some of that lighter fare and maybe actually have some football talk on the next podcast. So stay tuned, and we'll be back soon. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, everybody.